So, on April 22nd, happy Earth Day. April 22nd, 1970 might have been seen as a one-time thing, but it sure has had some staying power, as has the planet, come to think of it. Southern Oregon University is combining Earth Day and Arbor Day celebrations today, including a talk about permaculture from our next guest. The talk will be followed by a tour of SOU's Ashland campus, looking through a permaculture lens. Let's find out what that's like. Dow Orion is our guest. She's a permaculture expert, has a permaculture consulting business and a farm in the Cottage Grove area, where she also works from time to time with the folks at Aprovecho, who've been in the Exchange a few times before. Dow, thanks so much for joining us on the Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
We get into discussions of permaculture a fair amount, and I think we always have to start at the same place, a brief description of what that is.
Well, permaculture is a way of designing human habitation in the context of natural systems. So we take into account our needs for food and shelter, medicine, community, economic needs, but kind of place it or nest it in the context of natural systems to try to make a more integrated livelihood.
So that what we do does not reduce the capacity of the land to produce the things that we need from it?
Yeah, and in fact, really thinking in terms of regenerating ecosystems in the course of making a living, so rather than degenerating them.
Okay, so not just holding it harmless, but actually improving it as you
yes,
go along.
Ideally.
Is that a tough concept to get across to people or a tough thing to do?
Well, I think that you know, there's a lot of talk about all of the negative effects that people have on ecosystems and, you know, that our economic system is having on the planet today, which is certainly true. And I think it's important to start to broaden the conversation to think about how we can have positive impacts on the land around us. So,
is it necessarily also organic? Is it necessarily toxic chemical free? I mean, what are some of the parameters that are some of the basics of permaculture?
Well, the permaculture design system is based on a series of ethics. Those are care for the earth, care for people, reinvest and redistribute surplus back into regenerative systems. So to me, caring for earth and caring for people and really redistributing surplus really leaves out any kind of use of, you know, products from pesticide manufacturing corporations, for example. So they are harmful to all three of those ethics.
Was this something that you had learned as you were growing up, or did you come to it as a student?
You know, I didn't really grow up on a farm. We always had a big garden, but I studied agroecology and organic agriculture as a college student and have worked on organic farms pretty much my whole life since then, and did my first permaculture course in 2002 and have been working in that field since then and just developing my sense of observing ecosystems and learning more about what's going on there and how we can kind of affect those systems.
Going back to review some earlier discussions we've had about permaculture, I was reminded that for some people tend to look at this not just as a way of cultivating land, but I mean, we're talking about an entire lifestyle here.
Yeah, I think, you know, some people think of it as a revolution disguised as organic gardening. but, you know, I think the gardening aspects of it are interesting and good to think about, but it also has much wider implications in the economic sphere. Also, you know, for the research for my book, looking at the practice of restoration, how we can apply the principles that are part of what makes permaculture a design system to these other facets of our lives, I think are kind of the frontier of the practice of permaculture.
So outside of what you do on land, I mean, is there also like a set of ethics that correspond to the things you buy, where you buy them, how you travel to where you buy them, stuff like that?
Well, there's this kind of idea within the realm of permaculture of the transitional ethic, just kind of acknowledging that right now it's kind of impossible to be, you know, completely perfect in your purchasing and but trying to relocalize our economy by supporting local farmers and, you know, doing things of that nature where we're starting to interact more on terms of a gift economy, things like that are all part of what could be considered a permanent culture, which is where the word permaculture comes from.
Permanent culture as in if you didn't change anything, it would continue to exist in that state?
Or just a culture that is living within its means in terms of its local resources, not degrading them in the pursuit of maintaining a livelihood, but figuring out ways that we can be having a beneficial regenerative effect on the ecosystems that we live in.
Permaculture, the discussion topic. Dow Orion, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's a permaculture expert, author of a book called Beyond the War on Invasive Species. She'll be on the Southern Oregon University campus speaking this after, well, today at noon, and followed with a campus tour after that. You can join us on the Exchange. If you've got some stories you'd like to share about sustainability efforts in your own life, permaculture in your own life, please share those or ask questions of Dow at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I find myself using the term sustainability and permaculture rather interchangeably. Am I making a mistake there, or is there a lot of overlap?
I think there's a lot of overlap, and I think there's, you know, within the permaculture community, a lot of discussion about the different merits of various terms that are bandied about. And I think one difference between sustainability and permaculture would be permaculture maybe focusing more on the regenerative aspect, like let's go beyond just sustaining what's here, but let's really think about ways that we can give back and enhance biodiversity and kind of move forward and adapt to changes that are happening in our climate systems, et cetera, to make sure that as much life remains on the planet as possible.
I think I sense the difference. So sustainable is sort of a like, let's just get back to where we started. But permaculture is talking about getting beyond that and leaving the place better than you found it.
Yes.
In a sense.
Yes.
How does the quote unquote normal way, and I'm using quote fingers here, of caring for the land generally fail in terms of permaculture?
Well, conventional agriculture, as a large example, is one of the leading drivers of biodiversity loss on the planet. And so what we're looking at there, as many people are aware, is hundreds of millions of acres of monocropped systems that are considered the most economically efficient production models. But the reality on the ground is, from an ecosystem perspective, when you have a production system like that, there's not room for any other creatures. They're sprayed out of existence using herbicide to kill all plants besides the crop plant. They're anything that tries to eat those plants and insect life is killed with insecticide. So there really is a drawing down of life in those systems. And as you know, more and more people are on the planet, those, food production becomes more necessary and is expanding into areas where previously it hasn't been. And the once diverse biological ecosystems that used to exist are now transformed into monocultures. And that is a huge issue when it comes to thinking about biodiversity preservation. And a permaculture approach would say, well, let's look at the ways that we can start to produce our needs more locally and within the context of even urban ecosystems, where once we do that, we can start to kind of decrease our reliance on these major scale, ecologically destructive agricultural systems, because we'll be producing what we need where we are. And in fact, I think when we start to do that more, we'll become more aware of the ways that our actions are affecting our local watersheds. There will be more of a sense of care and stewardship of those spaces, whereas now, you know, we can just kind of let our septic tank overflow into the river and it doesn't really matter. We're not necessarily using that water for our immediate livelihood. We can just go to Costco and get whatever we need. But if we imagine a future where those types of relationships are brought closer to bear to our home ecosystems, that type of approach to living with the land, I think, would shift significantly.
So. Is the relationship with people complete enough so that permaculture is also limited by what a person or a group of people can do? In other words, are you limiting farm size by the number of people who can work the land in a permaculture system?
Well, it's an interesting question, because our current economic model is based on most people going to, quote, work in places that don't have really much to do with immediate livelihood needs. And so, you know, there could come a time when that economic model isn't as viable, and that there will be a lot of work possible. Right now, in the permaculture world, you know, people like to say that there's not a lot of jobs, but there's a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work in the field of restoration. If we are to, you know, relocalize our food production, we need a lot more people engaged in that. You know, you don't necessarily have a tractor that can till 1,000 acres in a day. You would need to replace that with people who are actively engaged in producing their own food. But not necessarily everyone wants to be a farmer. And that's not, I think, what permaculture is looking towards. It's more kind of finding ways that our particular interests and needs can connect. You know, people will be healers, people will be foresters, people will be artists, musicians, etc. There's a wide diversity of needs in the context of any society, and all of those are important. But I think thinking about how we can mutually support each other in those endeavors as part of the permaculture, the vision of permaculture, I would say.
Dalla Ryan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about permaculture. You can join the discussion at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. She'll be hosting a talk this afternoon, a permaculture workshop at noon at the Hannon Library on the Southern Oregon University campus, followed by a campus walk. And we have a call here, so grab your headphones, and we need to get Cynthia and Talent here on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dalla Ryan.
I'm a permaculturist as well, and I've read your book, Dow, and really thought it was very well done. I would have loved more solutions, though. I think that one of the things we need to do is say yes more often and say no less if we really want to engage the larger, you know, mainstream folks who are dealing with everyday problems with invasives and weeds and stuff, especially at this time of year. So I would love to see, you know, more solutions when we talk about these things. Not everyone can run pigs through their property. You know, there are lots of people who just need to get rid of the weeds in their gravel driveways, for instance. We can't really go back, and I don't think that permaculture is about going back to a time when people lived, you know, like peasants, or, you know, big farms had slaves, or lots of children who work the fields for free. And so we really need to reinvent sort of our future way of the way we do our land, the way we manage our land and have a relationship with our land. And I think that I don't know all the answers. I don't think any of us do, but we need to have respectful conversations about what the challenges are without judging people. But just working together, lifting up the organic, you know, commitment. So that's my comment.
All right. Thank you for that, Cynthia. Very much appreciate it. Wow, a lot to take in there, Dow, but your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Cynthia. You know, I've been traveling around the country a little bit, just talking to people, and I definitely have ideas in the works for more of a practical kind of workbook based on specific invasives and how to manage them. I feel like that would be another project that's maybe simmering, because you're right, you know, there's a lot to explore with each invasive species and how to manage them organically. And I also really appreciate your comments just about, you know, I don't think any one of us knows the exact solution for how things are going to look in the future, but I think that having these types of conversations and starting to kind of knit together the webs of relationships that may have been severed over the course of, you know, the kind of industrial capitalist economic model that we are all part of. You know, there's a lot of creativity and beauty and interesting new features emerging, and I'm really excited about being a part of that conversation or those conversations. So thanks for that.
I think I hear part of Cynthia's concern in the voicings of other people who say things like, she says, like, I just need to get rid of the weeds in my driveway. And so they reach for the can of Roundup. I mean, is it that much more time consuming? Does it take that much more time and attention to try to do things in sustainable permaculture kinds of ways?
Well, Yes, often it does. And, you know, I think one of the things that I hope to bring to light, you know, through the course of writing this book and talking to people about these issues is that, you know, plants out of place, what we call weeds, are there for a reason. And what I hope is that by reading the book or by, you know, thinking about those plants or animals in a certain way, in a more systemic, whole systems perspective, that we can start to understand what they're doing there, because then we can start to modify the conditions that allow them to thrive, rather than focusing on them as the problem, which is similar to how in conventional agriculture, you know, like I was describing, the weeds are the problem, so herbicide's the solution, or the insects are the problem, so insecticide is the solution. But really, both of those factors in a crop production system are representative of processes that are going on underground in the soil. They're representative of the climate, whether it's, you know, been a wet spring or there's been an extended drought. All of those have effects on the types of plants and animals that you see in a particular place and time. So if we can start to understand those dynamics, we can start to manage them in ways that, you know, don't turn to kind of the short-term apparent solutions such as Roundup, because, you know, Roundup has a whole set of issues associated with it that's going to change the structure of the soil microbial community. Monsanto patented glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, as a antibiotic in 2010, so it kills bacteria. It changes the soil microbial profile. And there's a number of other concerns with it. The World Health Organization in 2015 said that Roundup or glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen. There's a lot of research that hasn't been done about that particular herbicide and all of the other ones that are widely used. So, you know, to kind of take that off the table, I think as a solution is important, and just think about, you know, what these plants are doing in their place. And, you know, it's a different approach perhaps, but it's one that long term is going to have much more viable and regenerative outcomes.
One person's weed is another person's feed, I guess, is the way we should be looking at this. We're talking to Dow Orion, and I had the time wrong. Her lecture is at 11 at the Hannon Library at the Southern Oregon University campus. Lecture at 11, campus walkthrough at noon. You can join the conversation in the couple minutes we have left. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. The idea of this walkthrough really kind of fascinates me, the idea of looking with eyes, once you've learned a bit about permaculture, at the landscape around you, which you do all the time, and you're going to be teaching a room full of people how to do that. So what are some of the things you advise people to look for on these walkthroughs?
Well, it depends. That's kind of another kind of joke in the permaculture world. The answer to every question is it depends. You know, what I think about when it comes to looking at invasive species management or just, you know, farm planning when I do consulting out on somebody's property is, what is the goal? What are you trying to achieve in this particular space? And how can we move the system towards those ends? Because, you know, you as the client, in this case the university, has certain goals, you know, whether that's for an aesthetically beautiful landscape with, you know, mostly ornamental trees and shrubs, you know, that's one set of goals that is being managed for right now. Perhaps there's a conversation to be had about expanding those goals or changing those goals.
So maybe some of the ornamental trees will be replaced by fruit-bearing trees, that
well,
sort of thing?
That could be an option. You know, I think, but then that comes with a whole set of management and paradigm shifts within the field of, you know, the landscaping services. So there would have to be a wider conversation about how that would take place and what would be the long-term management strategy. Because again, and as Cynthia mentioned, you know, these approaches to food production, et cetera, they're not easy. They do require work, and there has to be some kind of, you know, economic model that supports more jobs in this case, or more people on the ground, or perhaps it would be a volunteer-led kind of situation, such as the Portland Fruit Tree Project, where there's a nonprofit that just harvests all of the fruit in the city that people don't want on their urban lots and then donates it to homeless shelters and food banks. You know, there's a lot of different options there. So it's kind of a matter of putting together the different pieces of inputs and outputs and thinking of it as a system.
Is there a primer for people who can't make it, a first step when you're looking at the landscape to think about when you're looking at some place maybe you haven't seen before, or maybe your own yard?
Well, like a book resource? You mean,
just a one thing to look for. I mean, to look at the landscape differently, to look with permaculture eyes.
Well, I would say to start thinking about what you're seeing in terms of it being a continuum. Like it's not a static system. Nature is always changing. And I think a lot of kind of our conventional wisdom about it is that things are just going to stay the same forever and ever. and we have to start thinking about the dynamic nature of how even our front lawn, we should anticipate that it's going to change. And, you know, I was just at a conference in Maine, the Beyond Pesticides conference, and was hearing about how municipalities are starting to adopt pesticide-free turf management mm-hmm. systems for playing fields and, you know, bigger scale municipal kind of areas. And the way that that is shifting is by people starting to think about how the lawn itself is an ecosystem and how we can kind of bolster what we want, which is a healthy grass ecosystem, you know, and even that is permaculture, even though we're not growing food.
Okay, lots of places to be looking at the landscape around us. Beyond the War on Invasive Species is Dow Orion's book. Her talk is at 11 at the library at SOU, followed by a campus walkthrough at noon. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.